Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
I love it that we live in a multicultural society, not just because of the rich array of food, a reason often given for appreciating a multicultural melting pot that we have in Australia. I think this one arena in particular is where a truly Christian outlook is truly good for our society, our world. We realise our world is God's gift to us. We certainly don't earn where we're born, have no control over it. And if we're born in the lucky country, how grateful should we be for it? And if it's a gift, how can we not share it with others, especially seeing all people, no matter where they come from, are created in God's image? Authentic Christian faith and racism, it strikes me, are worlds apart. But of course, no one can deny racial tension, the fear of others, other belief systems. My next guest understands this problem from both sides. As a first-generation Australian, he heard about the Christian faith with very new ears. And then he went on to plant a ministry among those of his culture. Archie Poulos has a really rich and really interesting story, and I'm so pleased that he joins us on Open House. Archie, welcome.
Thank you very much, Lee.
Poulos, I guess Greek.
Greek, yes. In fact, Poulos just means son of, so it's actually Georgopoulos.
Yes, okay. So how did the Australian connection begin?
Well, my parents came to Australia. My father actually served in the Australian Army in the Second World War. My mother was caught up in the war in Greece and saw all the atrocities there, and so as a young girl came to Australia. The amazing thing is they were actually born 5 kilometres from each other but had to come here to meet.
You're kidding.
That's right.
That's amazing. So where did they come here?
My father came here as a young boy again in the 1920s and my mother in 1948.
Yeah.
They settled up on the north coast in Ballina. Greeks always have fish and chip shops. So my father went all around the state looking for a fish and chip shop to buy, and fortunately they settled in Ballina. It could have been anywhere,
mate,
but I'm glad it was Ballina.
I tell you what, you've got me. My wife will tell you that if I kind of dream about just running away from it all, Ballina is the ultimate for me. And if it's fish and chips, you got me.
Oh, I'm very glad it was there.
Tragic. What was your childhood like there?
Well, there were only 2 Greek families in the town. Wow. That is my father and his brother. And so we didn't feel particularly Greek, but we really were Greek. And so when we heard Greek music, Boxing Day, the Greeks from all around the North Coast gathered. And when Greeks gather, everyone hears it.
I bet. But lots of singing, dancing.
That's right. But at school, it wasn't particularly Greek because we didn't hang out with other Greeks because there were no others.
Yeah, how was that? I think the term WOG, if I can use it, thanks to a few comedians, it's become almost a term of endearment now. But I'm sure it wasn't.
I can only remember a few times in high school being called a WOG and finding it really, really offensive because it was quite uncommon up in the North Coast. But when you're called it, it's always a put down.
Oh, yes.
I came to Sydney and met up with other Greeks, we all called each other WOGs.
Yeah. Define for me the Greek culture, the Greek character.
Oh, that's a hard one, isn't it?
What's it like to be Greek?
To be Greek is to be part of the family, to know that even though Australia is home, there's another home which is back home in Greece. And so it's family gatherings, it's just the dancing, it's hearing the noises, it's smelling the smells, it's all those other things that just make you long for something that isn't quite here. I didn't go back to Greece until about a decade ago, and I was on the boat going to the island that my family came from, and through the mist I could see the rock, and I just burst into tears.
Oh, did you?
That's what it's like, I think, for most second generations, is here Australia is home, but there's another place that's home as well, yeah. even though I'd never been there before.
Where was that rock back
in Greece? That was a little island called Kythira. There are more Kytherians in Sydney than there are on Kythira.
Are there really?
That's right.
Maybe I don't blame them. What was your religious practice, if any, in your family?
Well, I grew up in a Protestant church. My mother always told us we were Greek Orthodox, but there was no Orthodox church in our town. And so my aunt asked the priest, where should we send them to Sunday school? And the priest said, well, we're closer to the Catholics, but they'll try and convert them, so send them to the Protestants. And so I went down the back lane to the little Methodist Sunday school from my earliest memories are there in that Sunday school.
Yeah.
And so grew up in a Protestant church, But with my mother, who assumed I was Greek Orthodox, and there was Greek Orthodox things going on all the time. In fact, when I was confirmed at 15, and my mother was just absolutely devastated by that, she said, "We're Orthodox." And because I'd never gone to an Orthodox school or an Orthodox church, I didn't realise that was the case.
It wasn't an issue.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. It was for her.
Because in those days, it was the right thing to send your kids to Sunday school.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think it would have been different had I been a Sydney Greek, because there's lots of Greeks in Sydney. So I think that's the difference, being in the country.
Very much more Orthodox.
Yeah.
How and where did you first hear about the Christian faith that you really connected with it, do you think?
Well, I grew up in Sunday school. I can still remember some of the songs we sang in Sunday school as a 4 or 5-year-old. And then going through primary school and high school, I came to know that Jesus was the only hope for humanity and the only hope for me. But I think, I guess that's like many people, but then coming to Sydney at the end of high school, starting of university, I think I could have gone anyway. It would have been very easy to give up on Jesus. And fortunately, in God's goodness, I just found a good church with people my own age and just kept growing through that.
Was it an intellectual decision back when you were about 15? Was it an emotional thing, or you just carried along with a crowd?
There wasn't much of a crowd. There's only a couple of us my age, so I don't think it was that. It was intellectual, but I think even from the youngest days, you asked before what it is to be Greek. Part of Greek is being emotional. And so I knew that Jesus was the one I had to cling on to, I think. And so it was an emotional activity back then, an emotional decision, but certainly based on truth. So there was an intellectual component to it as well.
Notwithstanding your emotions, you become an engineer.
That's right. That's my natural disposition.
That's very cruel of that. Why engineering?
Oh, I liked chemistry at school. I liked maths at school. So I just went down the pathway of chemical engineering. And I loved being an engineer.
And then you stopped.
Yeah.
Why was that?
All through university, I kept leading Bible study groups, being involved in church, being involved in the work on the campus, telling people about Jesus. And I was asked actually to stop being an engineer and do Christian ministry, but I decided not to, and I can talk more about that later on if you like. But I remember sitting in my office with some plans of a factory that I had designed, and I sat there, and I pushed the chair back, and I thought, if I have designed the most efficient factory in the world, what's it achieved? The company I work for makes a bit more money, or you buy the product a little bit cheaper. But if I can see someone around the throne of God in heaven because of what he allows me to say, then that's really what's worthwhile.
For eternity.
For eternity, yeah. And so I just wrote my letter of resignation. By the way, that was the hardest thing I think I've ever done. I think it was even harder than asking my wife to marry me. because it actually means Greeks, the other thing about being Greek is we love security.
Yes.
You know, the old joke is, you know, what do you call a Greek with 3 houses? And the answer is lazy. And so writing the letter meant cutting the ties to security. And so I had to keep remembering that if God feeds the sparrows of the air and he clothes the flowers of the field, he'll look after me. But it was a hard task.
What did your parents think?
My father had died by that stage. At the end of uni, I was asked to give up engineering and do Christian ministry. So I got on the bus for a long weekend to go and tell my mother. I was up there for the 3 days, couldn't muster the nerve to tell her. So,
how old were you at this stage?
I was about 23.
Okay.
And then about 15 minutes before the bus was leaving, I told her, and she wasn't furious, she was just devastated. And she said, "You're old enough to make up your own mind, but never expect me to support you." So I kissed her goodbye. She was crying, I was crying, and I walked down to the bus stop. As it turned out, I delayed for 2 years in going into Christian ministry. And then 2 years later, I went back to tell her. I had more nerve then, so I told her straight away. And the lovely thing is that God had changed her as well. And so I told her I was going to teach the Bible. And she said, "If there's anything I can do to help, just let me know."
Wow.
That's a wonderful change.
What turned her around, Archie?
Oh, it's this lovely story. She had a stroke and so was housebound. And there was a lovely lady who was a Salvation Army lady who used to come and visit her every day and just talk to my mother about what Jesus was doing in her life. And then there was another lady who came round to try and share the news about Jesus with my mother. And between those two ladies, Mum started reading her Bible more seriously and she came to love Jesus.
What a beautiful story. On Open House, we're with Archie Poulos, the founder of the Greek Bible Fellowship, which I wanted to get to now, Archie. Tell us about the beginnings of that and why that. What need did you see that a Greek Bible Fellowship be set up?
As I said to you before, I am fairly different to most Sydney-born Greeks because I grew up not feeling particularly Greek. But I went to the University of New South Wales where 10% of the population had a Greek background. And the Christian groups there weren't reaching them because to be Greek is to be Greek Orthodox. Yes. And so the chaplain at the time, Philip Jensen, put his hand on my shoulder and he said to me, "You've got something I'll never have." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "A Greek surname." And he said, "We should try and gather some Greeks around you." And as I was watching at the time trying to work out what to do, I noticed it was true. I went to buy some fruit from the grocer one day.
Don't tell me his name's Con.
No, it wasn't Con, but you could probably guess the next word. I bought the apples and he said something to his daughter in Greek. And I responded to him and he said, "You Greek?" And I said, "Yes." And
so he took what he said was polite.
No, what he did was he took the apples back, gave me more and better ones because there's a connection. It's family. There's a connection between being Greek and being Greek.
That's great.
And so what we wanted to do was to help Greek people get to know Jesus without thinking that you've got to stop being Greek. To teach the Bible, a Greek person teaching the Bible to Greek people is the model that we started with.
How much did food play?
Food was there right from the beginning. I think it's true of most ethnic cultures, but yes. food is almost everything because food is a way that says, "You matter, we care for you." I remember my mother, when we had people who came over to visit, Mum would work out how much people would eat and then double it. And then just to make sure, double it again. And what would happen is everybody would have their fill, and then Mum would go around and make sure that you had even more again, and then make sure that you had as much as that to take home with you.
Oh, Mrs. Poulos.
It's one of those things that says, "You are important to me." It's what family, it's what community is all about. Yep. And so all of our ministry is around food.
I had no doubt. Favourite Greek dish, just by the way?
Oh, well, Greek. Any food is good, but I think a really nice pastitsio is the way to go.
Okay. You're on the record now. So how hard or challenging was it to launch this ministry?
Well, we started it at the University of New South Wales because that's the group that we had contact with, and we decided we would do it at a neutral time in a neutral place. So we just met in a hut, a room at the university on a Friday night, so that I could invite Greek people to come and study the Bible with other Greeks at the university.
And pretty soon, non-Greeks started turning.
Well, our first public night, so we started off as a small Bible study group, and there's two of us to start with. We grew to about a dozen fairly quickly, and so we launched on this Friday night. There were 17 of us on that first night. There was three Greek sisters. One of them had a Chinese friend, so he came along as well. And then one of the Greek girls had a friend who was Italian, and she brought her Lebanese Muslim boyfriend with her as well. So The first week, it was fairly diverse.
Yes, indeed. How did you thinking, Archie, about taking Christian faith to various different ethnic, cultural or religious groups develop from there? Because it was a work in progress.
What we thought at the time was that Greeks attract Greeks. And so people talk about the homogeneous unit principle, which I think is true. People want to be around people who are like them. Yep. So we thought Greeks would attract Greeks. What we discovered was that that's not actually the right homogeneous unit. It's second generation people have an affinity with each other. And so the children of those that have migrated here just have an affinity with the other children of people that have migrated from anywhere, which is what we found in the Greek Bible Fellowship. What I wanted to do was set up a gathering around the Bible so that Greek people from Sydney could hear about Jesus, Greek young people from Sydney. I realised that was really, in the end, a silly prayer. So I started changing the prayer that everybody from around the world, everywhere, would hear of Jesus. Because what we found was, as we told people about Jesus, as we read the Bible, they came to understand Jesus as he truly is, and then they spoke with their friends, they spoke with their parents, they spoke with people of other nationalities, and so the message of Jesus just kept going beyond what we thought it would do.
Yeah. God has a funny way like that.
Yes. So what? Yes, this goes to the earliest church, actually.
Yes, indeed. So what became of the Greek Bible Fellowship?
Well, it continued to meet for a number of years, and I was wrong. I rejected changing the name from Greek Bible Fellowship. It's now the Cross Cultures Bible Church, which meets at Arncliffe. And so there's a whole lot of different nationalities that are involved in that ministry. And from that, we've spawned a whole lot of other ministries as well.
Yes. Archie, in recent years, we've seen an influx of migrants to Australia from very different backgrounds. Two groups that spring to my mind, people of the Muslim faith and, say, Sudanese people who've come to Australia. I think we can sometimes get scared of the idea of relating, say, to both of those groups because they are so different.
Mm. Yes. We all are terrified of minority groups. Part of that is that minority groups, because of their fear of us, hang together. And so it looks like they are taking over the world, and it's not in fact the case. The other thing that happens too, though, is that we normally hear the stories that are difficult and scary and bad, and we don't hear the great stories.
Yeah.
So when we were involved in the Cross Cultures Church at Arncliffe, I used to go and door knock down the bottom of the hill, which was 100% Muslim. And as I door knocked, I thought, this is just like the country town I grew up in. The kids are playing out in the street. The parents are talking with each other. They are lovely people. It's not the terrorists that we keep being told about. And so here's an opportunity. God has brought people, Muslim people, to Australia. And I think one of the reasons he's done that is so that they might hear about Jesus.
I've always thought that, say, if I landed in Sudan, first group that I'd look for, any Aussies out there?
Absolutely. That's what we do, don't we?
Yes.
And but when you see a group of, for example, Sudanese or Muslims gathering together, you're the Anglo and there's 20 of them and you feel scared, you forget that what they look out on is 1,000 Anglos and they're scared.
Yeah.
And so every culture, every race has its difficult people and has its antisocial people in it. But I think we have no more right to this land than anyone else does. And God has brought them to this country so that with the freedoms we have here, we can talk about Jesus.
Yes. Is that how you connect Christian faith with them? Because that can often be a challenge.
Yes. There's a few ways. One is, I think, for example, the Sudanese migration, there is such need that the Sudanese people have. We have a responsibility to care for them. You don't have to read very long into the Gospels to see that Jesus is concerned for the outcast. That's one of our responsibilities. So that's what we need to take more seriously. But secondly as well, I think in our head we have assumptions about people from another culture without ever asking them what they believe, how they think, what's going on in their mind at the moment. And so what I want to do is ask them about themselves. So that actually gives me the right then to tell them about what I believe as well. And so I think it's actually in dialogue that we do things. So for Muslim people, I want to hear why they believe the Quran and what they understand their faith to be, so that I might bring the truth of the gospel of Jesus to them so we can actually start discussing things.
Love them.
Yeah,
I understand that you have a friend from a Middle Eastern country who was involved in some warlike behaviour, let's put it that way, and then he came to Australia and then he embraced Christian faith. Tell us about that story.
Yes, I think in the 70s and 80s, everybody from the Middle East was involved in a warlike culture. But here is a person, you know, early teenage years, what you're concerned about at that age is playing soccer and things like that.
Yes.
But at 14, the boys had to decide whether they wanted to be Muslim or Christian. They hadn't thought about it much before then. And for us, it's not just like saying, I've chosen this one or the other. It means then that you fight against the other. And so if you choose to be Muslim, you fight against the Christian. And if you choose to be Christian, you fight against the Muslim. That is a terrible way to live your teenage years.
Yes.
So he came to Australia as a Muslim person. And we met him because he was good friends with a person who was thinking of becoming a Christian. So he came to our Bible study to try and prove us wrong. And here is the great power of God. After 3 weeks of reading the Bible, we're actually reading the book of Colossians. After 3 weeks of that, he decided to give his life to Jesus. And then 6 weeks later, he was baptized.
Wow.
He couldn't tell his family about that because they would have excommunicated him and would have done horrible things to him. In fact, when he was married a few years later, he was unable to even tell his father where the wedding was going to be because his father would have destroyed the church before the wedding.
Good grief.
Mm.
What's the message with that story, do you think, Archie?
The message is don't have your presuppositions, but good. There's a few other ones too. We underestimate how wonderful the story of Jesus is and how transforming that is. As we speak about Jesus, God is at work rewiring people's minds and actions, what they believe and how they act and live. And that's what we saw with him. And now he lives to see Muslim people come to know Jesus.
Yeah. So you're now on the staff of Moore Theological College. You're head of ministry there, ministry development. Tell us finally your big aim there. How would you like to see Christian ministers developed or turned out into a pretty challenging world today?
Yes, thank you. We only have our students at the college for 1, 3, or 4 years. And I've got to say that at the end of four years, our ministers aren't what they are going to one day be. So yes. There's a whole lot of things that you can only learn when you're on the job. So I want to say to churches, keep being patient with your young ministers. But what I want is to see, and this is the case, I think, with all of our students, I want them to be gripped by Jesus. I want them to know him. I want them to love him. And I want that transforming work that God does as you know him better to actually start to affect the way they see other people and treat other people and work with other people. So the college will give our students the intellectual ability to be able to answer questions. My task is to help them then to work out how do we live that out in life as we know God better.
What a most important task. Archie Poulos, it's been a great treat to talk with you. Time has flown, actually. It's always a good sign.
It's been wonderful, Lee.
Thanks so much for joining us on Open House.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.